Chapter 2. "Oz rules!" Puck exclaimed.
"How did you get here?" Sabrina asked.
"After I stepped into that crazy book, I was tossed inside a tornado. I got spun around at a million miles an hour, and then was flung all the way to the Emerald City. It was awesome!"
Daphne looked down at the wizard. His hands were bound tightly.
"What's his story?"
"His guards found me and locked me in a cell," Puck said, giving the man a healthy kick in the rear. "The whiz here figured out I was from the real world pretty fast and begged me to help him escape the book."
"Escape the book? Oh, dear," the Scarecrow murmured.
"That's what he said," Puck said. "I agreed to help, but knowing him like I do, I figured he would somehow double-cross me. So I decided to triple-cross him first. Then it dawned on me he might try a quadruple-cross, so I immediately skipped the quindruple, sextruple, and septdruple, and went straight to the octdruple cross. He never saw it coming. Once he turned his back, I tied him up and took over as the great and terrible Oz. The people either don't know the difference or don't care."
"Yeah, they keep treating me like I'm Dorothy," Daphne said.
"What about you?" Puck said, turning to Sabrina. Sabrina's face turned bright red.
"I'm Toto," she mumbled.
"Who?" "I'm the dog. Are you satisfied?"
Puck burst into an obnoxious, horsey laugh.
"I've been telling you that you were a dog since we first met. If we're getting married, you're going to have to go to the doctor and see what they can do about your face."
Sabrina seethed.
"What are you talking about?"
"Us getting married," Puck said. "You're my fiancé."
It took several moments for Puck's words to sink in. Puck couldn't have called her his fiancé, could he? But the look on Daphne's face, an expression filled with thrills and romantic giggles, confirmed that her ears were not playing tricks. She was certain her own face was glowing as red as a stoplight.
"We're married in the future, right?" Puck continued. "You told me we were. At first, the thought of marrying you made me sick. I mean, really, physically ill. I was barfing and fevered. I spent a few days in bed with the chills, but then I realized, hey, getting married might be the best thing that ever happened to me. I'll have someone to wait on me hand and foot. Having a wife is practically like having a slave, and I could really use the help. I hope you can cook, Grim. I like to eat."
"A slave?" Sabrina cried. "Is that what you think a wife is?"
"Of course," Puck said. "But before we get to that, we need to start planning our wedding and the reception. I was thinking we could have it in Pompeii, you know, where all those people were killed by the volcano. It's very romantic."
Sabrina thought she might explode like a volcano. She considered whether to strangle the boy now or in his sleep. Daphne stepped between them.
"We need you to fly us to the Wicked Witch's castle. We have to kill her and get her flying broom. We think it's our only way into the next story."
"Stop, stop, stop!" the Tin Man shouted. "You people don't understand what you're doing. You can't just skip ahead. Lots of stuff happens in between. The editor will know."
"Are they complaining about this editor person too?"
Puck said.
"The wizard was crying about him before I shoved the gag in his mouth. Personally, if I was going to terrorize people, I'd come up with a better name than the editor."
"True, the editor is lousy as a scary name," Daphne said.
"Stop saying his name,"
the cowardly lion whined.
"Do we have to take them?"
Puck asked, as his wings popped out of his back. They were pink and enormous, and with just a few flaps, they lifted his body into the air.
"We'll finish the story on our own," the Tin Man said.
The Scarecrow and the Cowardly Lion nodded their heads in agreement.
"I have to warn you," Daphne said. "The Scarecrow has his hay yanked out, the Cowardly Lion is chained up in a yard, and the Tin Man is thrown out a window of the castle. You could all skip that stuff if you come with us."
"That's what happens to these guys?"
Puck asked, as he snatched the girls up.
"You Grimms sure you don't want to go with them? It sounds hilarious."
Sabrina shook her head.
and Puck flew the girls toward an open window.
"Well, I wish I could say it was fun,"
Sabrina called back to the trio. A second later, they were soaring high over the spiraling green towers of Emerald City. Heading due west, Puck's wings lifted them higher and higher until they could see nearly every mile of the Land of Oz. They flew on for the better part of an afternoon before a dark castle came into view. Puck circled it once to find a good entrance and finally spotted an open window in a high tower. He swooped inside and they landed. The room was covered in tapestries the color of the night sky. In a far corner of the room, a dark figure was hovering over a crystal ball. Her face was illuminated by the ball's swirling light. Her skin was a pale shade of green. She had black, unkempt hair and a patch over her left eye. Her skin was covered in warts, and her teeth were filed down into fangs. She was one of the scariest people Sabrina had ever seen. But when she noticed the children, she let out a startled yelp and backed herself into the corner.
"You're early!" she cried. "You missed the flying monkey attack and the swarm of killer bees. I'm supposed to send all manner of torment against you before you get here."
"Sorry to disappoint you," Sabrina said, "but we have to move things along. Where do you keep the buckets of water?"
"Right, right," the witch said.
She rushed across the room and returned with a bucket full of hot, soapy water and a mop, which she placed in front of Daphne.
"Maybe the editor won't even notice. Okay, Dorothy, in this scene, you are scrubbing the floors. I'll go out and come back in. And when I do, I'll be very angry. All you have to do is throw the water on me, then I'll melt."
The witch raced out into the hall.
"I don't want her to melt. I'll have nightmares," Daphne said.
"She's not real, Daphne," Sabrina said.
The witch raced back into the room. She had a horrible expression on her face, but it quickly changed to confusion.
"Why aren't you scrubbing?"
"I don't want you to die," Daphne said.
"But that's what happened with the real Dorothy," the witch said. "You have to make me melt. Don't worry about me. I've done it a million times. It doesn't even hurt that much anymore."
Daphne frowned.
"It's not right."
Puck snatched the bucket from Daphne.
"I would love to see her melt," he said.
Daphne snatched the bucket back.
"No one is melting." "Give me back the bucket or you're not invited to the wedding," Puck cried.
"Okay, everyone calm down," Sabrina said.
"Should I go back out and try this again?"
the witch asked.
"I won't do it," Daphne said. "Daphne, we can't get to the door unless we do this," Sabrina said. "And we can't stay in this story. Mirror is in this book with our brother."
"I know that," the little girl cried.
"Here, I'll make this easy on everyone. Give me the bucket," the witch said, and tried to snatch it from Daphne. "I'll pour it on myself."
"No!"
"Kid, let go of the bucket," the witch demanded. "I want to melt, really, I do."
"You don't know what you want."
"I'm not kidding. Dump that water on me now."
"Forget it. You're staying dry."
Just then, the witch gave a mighty tug, and the bucket fell onto her. Water splashed across her body, and a hissing sound filled the room. The children could do nothing but watch as the woman's body began to dribble onto the floor like butter in a saucepan. A green puddle collected at their feet.
"Thank you so much,"
the witch cried just before the smile on her face leaked down her dress. Daphne was breathing deeply, and her face had taken on a queasy green hue that rivaled the witch's complexion.
"I am never going to get over that."
"I said it before, and I'll say it again. Oz rules," Puck cried.
Suddenly, a door materialized out of thin air. Sabrina stepped over and circled around it. It was painted red and had a little brass knocker on it. It could have been the front door of a million different homes, only there was no physical reason the door should be standing in midair. But it was there, right in front of them, defying reason. Sabrina clasped the knob, turned it, and swung the door open. A blast of wind blew her hair, and all around her was a smell of a burning fireplace.
"So this takes us to the next story?"
Puck shouted over the wind. Sabrina nodded.
"That's what we were told." "Where do you think it leads to?" Daphne asked.
"I don't know, but I hope it isn't as annoying as Oz," Sabrina said.
"I hope it's a place where people don't melt," Daphne grumbled.
Sabrina took Daphne's and Puck's hands, and together they stepped through the door. There was a whooshing sound, and Sabrina's stomach dropped. And then they suddenly found themselves in a somber library. All the furniture was a dark cherry wood. Tightly packed books, some that looked as old as time, were displayed neatly on bookshelves, soaring hundreds of feet into the air. A yellowing globe sat on a stone podium, and the head of some horrible alien animal was mounted above a crackling fireplace. In the center of the room was a high-backed leather chair, and resting in the chair was a thin, elderly man with hair as white as freshly fallen snow. A pair of antique spectacles sat precariously on the tip of his long, pointy nose. He leafed through a book with one hand and patted the bulbous head of a strange pink creature with the other. Sabrina recognized it as one of the scurrying creatures that attacked them on the road in Oz, the one the Tin Man had called a reviser. Its gnashing teeth and lack of eyes unnerved Sabrina.
"I know the fairy, Puck, Trickster, Imp, the Pooka," the old man said as he gestured to Puck. Then he turned his tiny eyes toward the girls. "You two I do not know."
"We're Sabrina and Daphne Grimm," Sabrina said.
"Did you say Grimm?"
"Yes, sir. What story is this?" Daphne asked.
Sabrina looked down at her own clothes to see if she and her sister had new outfits, but both she and Daphne were wearing their own clothing again. Even the silver slippers were gone. She looked up and saw that Dorothy's shoes were resting on a tray. The old man placed them in the mouth of the reviser next to his chair.
"Prepare these for reinsertion into the story," he said, and then turned his attention back to the children. "You are not in a story. You are in my library, a place few humans or ever-afters have ever seen. I have been forced to bring you here to protect the sanctity of the book you and your comrades are sullying. Running around in my pages causes quite a bit of damage."
"You're the editor," Sabrina said.
Four more of the pink creatures crawled out from beneath the old man's chair. He treated them like pets, scratching affectionately at their grotesque heads and bellies.
"The characters in the Book of Everafter are difficult enough to manage without the interference of visitors. You've made a complete mess out of the wonderful Wizard of Oz. You skipped over parts, you butchered the dialogue, and you changed the climax. I don't remember the witch begging Dorothy to kill her. My revisers will have quite a bit of work ahead of them to put things back to the way they really happened."
The old man rose from his chair and crossed the room to the door the children had just stepped through, which was still standing open in the middle of the floor. The pink monsters followed him there, and when he knelt down, they grinned and squeaked. He waved a hand as if to calm them, and then spoke softly.
"I'm afraid I need more than the five of you," he said. "I'm thinking the wonderful Wizard of Oz needs a complete page one rewrite. We're going to start over with this one. No use discovering we have a problem later."
The little pink monsters hopped forward to lick the man's hand with their long white tongues, and then scurried back. To Sabrina's amazement, the five divided themselves into 10, then 20, then 40, and on and on and on. They were like bacteria in a petri dish, reproducing at an alarming rate, until there were hundreds of them. They scuttled through the open doorway with their huge, fanged mouths open wide, and then the doorway closed.
"What are they going to do?" Daphne asked.
They are revisers, child. They are going to fix the changes you have made, which have been numerous.
And how do they do that? Sabrina asked suspiciously.
They're going to erase everyone and everything.
Erase?
I suppose a more accurate word would be eat.
Those things are going to eat everyone we met in Oz? Because of us?
Daphne cried.
Can I watch?
Puck said.
That's what a reviser does, the editor said. When they are finished, I can recraft the story so that it matches what happened at the actual event. You seem troubled. But if I were to allow the changes you made to stay in place, well, it would change history. Real history. Dorothy might have been trapped in Oz for good. The repercussions could be unpredictable and dangerous. Luckily, I'm here to put it back the way it has always been.
I have no idea what you're talking about, Sabrina said. The editor sighed impatiently.
Just like a Grimm to leap into a magic book without knowing how it works. Let me explain this in simple terms. 100 years ago, the Book of Ever After was created by the Ever After community as a sort of history book of its people, a living, breathing diorama of the places and events cherished most by the fairy tale folk of Fairyport Landing. Many of the stories mirror those documented by Jakob and Wilhelm Grimm, L. Frank Baum, Hans Christian Andersen, etc. But unlike the writings of those men, a person can actually walk into this history book and interact with the characters. This provided the community with the opportunity to vacation away from the town and its barrier, if they so desired, reliving their glory days, as it were. For nearly 4 decades, it was enjoyed by many, until an Ever After abused the privilege and altered the magic for her own personal gain. She turned the book's magic into something its original creators never imagined.
What did she do? Daphne cried.
She linked it to real history.
Huh?
Puck said.
Pay attention,
the editor snapped.
The changes she made were very dangerous. Now, when someone steps into the Book of Ever After, they can choose to change things they don't like, and history, in the real world, is forever changed. They can marry a different princess, choose not to kiss a frog, or arrive in time to make sure the wolf does not eat their grandmother. Whatever they change in these stories will change history. The real world will bend and twist to fit the changes. No one will remember that anything is different. This Ever After did just that. She went into her story, caused havoc, and her changes changed history.
Who was it? Daphne asked.
That is privileged information. All I will say is that her tale was tragic and heartbreaking, and now it is not. Needless to say, the woman made a mess and couldn't put the story back together in a way that made any sense. So, she created me and the revisers to help her fill in the holes. Since then, it has become my duty to clean up any further changes made by visitors and to keep the status quo. But you fools are messing things up. Every little change you make changes reality. That is, if I don't fix it back before it's too late.
We didn't know, Daphne cried.
Clearly,
the editor said.
Sabrina scowled. We're not a bunch of meddlesome kids joyriding in your stupid book. We're trying to rescue a member of our family. Once we find him, we'll go.
The editor frowned as he sat back in his big chair.
I can feel his presence, as well as two others. The magic mirror and Pinocchio, the marionette who wished to be a real boy.
Pinocchio helped Mirror kidnap our brother, Daphne said.
Regardless of their real-world transgressions, you do not belong here.
The old man gestured to the other side of the room, and another doorway materialized. The door swung open. On the other side stood Granny Relda and the girl's parents in the Hall of Wonders, looking down into the Book of Ever After. From their confused expressions, Sabrina could tell they couldn't see the girls or the library in which they were standing. Sabrina considered the editor's explanation. Perhaps one of the adults might do a better job than she would.
If she went back, her mother or father could step in and take up the hunt. Granny Relda would know what to do. The temptation to let someone else make the big choices was incredible. "We're not going without our brother," Daphne said, jarring her sister from her conflicted thoughts. "Mirror is planning on stealing his body. We won't go until he's safe. I don't care if we wreck every story in this book." The editor shifted in his chair. His face showed anger and surprise. "Leave now, or my revisers will devour you," he seethed. Puck shrugged.
"I've been eaten before. It's no big deal."
Daphne pulled Puck and Sabrina back toward the doorway they and the revisers had just stepped through. She opened it and faced a terrible wind layered with heat and humidity and smelling like something untamed and dangerous.
"You're making a terrible mistake," the editor shouted over the sound of the wind.
"If I had a nickel for every time a bad guy told me that, I'd be a rich detective," Daphne said.
She pushed everyone through, and suddenly there was a stomach-dropping moment, and then the editor and his creepy pets were gone. Sabrina stood on a large, flat rock beneath an inky night sky. The air was hot and humid and heavy with the musk of wild creatures. Jungle trees dipped down overhead, and the full moon's light lit up the ground. In her hand was a torch, which she held above her head. Its light revealed savage beasts surrounding her, a pack of wolves. Each held its haunches high, but their eyes were on the ground, and many were trembling in fear. The torch also illuminated the dirty loincloth that barely covered her.
"Thou art the master,"
a voice said from the trees above her head. It was smooth and serious, and when she looked up at it, she realized its owner was a black panther nestled in the branches.
"Save Akela from the death. He was ever your friend."
Terrified, Sabrina screamed and stumbled backward. When the panther did not pounce, she tried to calm herself. She told herself over and over again that she was in a story, and story animals were not the same as their man-eating real-life versions. At least, she hoped they weren't. The fact that the panther was talking boded well, too. Most of the talking animals in Fairyport Landing weren't savage. Annoying, for sure, but not bloodthirsty. Still, there was no sign of Daphne or Puck. Perhaps they had been the appetizers, and she was about to become the main course.
"Daphne? Puck? I could really use some help here."
An old gray wolf stood nearby, its head bowed in obedience. When she spoke, he looked up in confusion.
"What did the man cub say?"
"I have no idea," another said.
"Could the man cub repeat what he just said?"
"Man cub?"
Sabrina said, confused. Then a figure on hands and knees crawled toward her. It was Daphne, and she was giggling.
"We're in the Jungle Book."
Sabrina had not read the Jungle Book. Granny Relda had told her that its main character, Mowgli, was a good kid. So she had flipped through the book quickly and moved on to the next. Looking back, that hadn't been the best strategy.
"I'm a wolf," Daphne said, letting out a goofy howl at the silver moon.
It sounded less like a wolf and more like a wounded house cat.
"Guess who you are? You're Mowgli."
Sabrina searched her memory for facts about Mowgli. He was a boy from India who was raised by wolves. He had a friend that was a sloth bear and another that was a panther. She seemed to recall there was something else about a tiger, but she couldn't remember anything specific. Was the tiger really annoying and bouncing around a lot? Maybe that was another story. "Where's Puck?" Sabrina asked. Daphne shrugged as she got to her feet.
"He's around here somewhere."
Sabrina frowned as she studied the wolf pack nervously.
"Any idea what we're supposed to do before we're turned into dog food?"
Pardon me? One of the wolves cried. We are not dogs. We are wolves.
Proud ones at that, another shouted.
Just then, a huge animal lumbered onto the rock. It was orange and white and all muscle. Sabrina nearly dropped her torch in fright when she realized it was a Bengal tiger. This particular animal hobbled on a lame foot, but that did nothing to detract from its menacing presence.
Enough! It roared. This is not how things went. You are supposed to grant Akela a pardon from the death, and then accept your banishment from the pack and the council. Then, you are supposed to attack some of the wolves with your torch, and then attack me. You must stick to what happened, or the revisers will come. Follow the original events, or I will kill you where you stand, man-cub.
First, I'm not a man-cub. If anything, I'm a woman-cub, Sabrina said. Secondly, I don't know this story well enough to follow it, so you're gonna have to cut me a break.
Perhaps I should just cut you, Shere Khan said, flashing the claws on his good paw.
A figure dropped out of the sky and landed between the girls and the tiger.
Keep your paws off my fiancé, you flea-ridden stray, Puck shouted.
By the lock that freed me, the panther cried as he craned his neck to eye the boy fairy. Who are you?
Puck put his hands on his hips and puffed up his chest.
I am the trickster king, leader of the lazy, master of mayhem, savior of the...
Surely you've heard of me. The wolves looked at one another and then shook their heads.
Are you one of the monkey people?
Puck frowned and turned back towards Shere Khan.
No, I am not one of the monkey people. I am the sworn protector of the Grimms, and you will not touch them, or I will turn the hose on you.
Shere Khan roared so powerfully that Puck's hair was blown into an even bigger mess than usual.
We're in the Jungle Book, Daphne said to Puck. They think Sabrina is Mowgli, and I'm one of the wolves.
Whoever you are messing with the story,
Shere Khan bellowed. A strand of saliva leaked out of the creature's mouth and dribbled to the ground.
The editor will not tolerate it, and I have no intention of being revised.
What are you going to do about it? Puck taunted.
Go ahead, raise your paw to me. I need a new rug.
The tiger leaped forward with every talon extended. He slashed at the boy fairy, who barely had time to pull his wooden sword from his pants and block the mighty blow. Puck swung back, but his tiny weapon was deflected by a vicious swat. The sword flew out of his hand and landed in some tall grass. Shere Khan's razor-sharp claws caught the side of Puck's hoodie and slashed it to ribbons. Puck yelped as his wings extended and he flew into the air.
Puck!
Sabrina cried. As he hovered above the tiger, Puck looked slightly rattled, but he gestured for the girls to stay where they were.
It's okay. I shouldn't have underestimated him. He may not be real, but his claws are.
Come down here, mosquito, so I can finish the job, Shere Khan said.
Puck swooped down and snatched his sword from the grass. Then he flew directly over the tiger and swung his weapon into Shere Khan's spine. The huge cat groaned in agony and fell to the ground.
If I were you, I'd slink back to your owner, Puck said. Perhaps you'll get a bowl of milk.
Shere Khan lumbered to his feet. His bright orange hide glowed in the firelight, and his eyes smoldered like hot coals. He glared at Puck, and then in one sudden movement, he leaped toward a tree and used it to launch himself at his enemy. Puck kicked him in the face, but not before the creature slashed at his chest. The deadly claws had only missed his skin by a fraction of an inch. Puck's hoodie would never be the same. Sabrina was shaken. Like Puck, she too had assumed they couldn't be hurt in the stories. They weren't actually the people they were pretending to be. They were more like actors playing the parts in the stories.
she would never have suspected that they would ever really be attacked. She had once been in a school production of Stone Soup in the second grade, and none of the pilgrims had attacked her. The risk of injury or death added another worry to her rapidly growing list of concerns. Puck lunged at the beast again, but it smacked him backward with a well-timed punch. He fell from the sky and rolled into Sabrina, knocking the torch out of her grasp. It fell onto the flat, smooth rock and rolled into an outcrop of tall grass nearby. A moment later, the wild flora burst into hungry flames that threatened to spread to everything around it.
"What have you done?" the Black Panther cried.
"What have I done?" Sabrina repeated. "The tiger is the one causing the problems."
An old wolf stepped forward to address the other wolves.
"Flee, brothers! The red flower is blossoming!"
The wolves howled and darted into the burning jungle. The Black Panther leaped down from his tree and followed them in a panic.
"What red flower?" Sabrina said.
"They're talking about the fire," Daphne said. "It's part of the book, but this forest fire is not. The story wouldn't have been very good if Mowgli torched the forest and killed everything for miles."
"Speak for yourself," Puck said, still fighting with the tiger. "That story would rule."
"What should we do?" Sabrina asked.
"We need to get out of here," Daphne shouted.
"Right behind you," Puck said.
The girls started to follow the fleeing pack, but were stopped in their tracks by Shere Khan. His eyes locked onto the children, and his jaws filled with angry foam. Sabrina couldn't tell whether the rising temperature she felt came from the fire or the rage wafting off the jungle cat.
"You have doomed us all. The editor and his revisers will be here any moment," Shere Khan said. "Perhaps he will spare me if I kill those responsible for the damage."
Puck zipped down and snatched each of the girls by the back of their shirts. A moment later, they were rising skyward.
"If Garfield the cat here won't let us pass, I suppose we'll have to take another route."
Shere Khan leaped at them, swatting with his massive paws. But the children were already out of his reach and sailing over the fiery jungle.
"Thanks for the save," Sabrina said.
"No problem, honey bunny," Puck said. "I can't exactly let my bride-to-be become cat food."
"The second we're on the ground, I'm going to put my fist into your mouth, you stinky, scummy sack of stupid," Sabrina said.
Just then, a stone sailed into the air and slammed into Puck's head.
"Ow!"
he cried, flapping awkwardly in the air and nearly dropping the girls. Sabrina looked down and saw hundreds of monkeys swinging from treetops and shaking angry fists at them.
"I think those are the monkey people we heard about," Daphne said.
Puck did his best to avoid the flying rocks, zigging and zagging around each projectile, but there were too many of them. Their only defense was to fly higher.
"How does this story end?" Sabrina asked. "We can't stay up here much longer." "That depends," Daphne said. "The Jungle Book is a collection of short stories. Technically, this part is over, and so the door might be down there."
"You want me to fly down into that inferno?" Puck said.
"Yes,"
Sabrina squeaked. She hoped her uncertainty was covered by the wind.
"You're completely insane. A good quality in a wife." "Hold on," Puck said.
His wings stopped flapping, and the three dropped toward the ground. Sabrina was sure they were about to be splattered on the jungle floor when Puck's wings expanded and caught an updraft of hot air. They glided to safety and touched down on the ground, surrounded by burning trees.
"Do you see a door?"
Daphne asked as she scanned their surroundings.
"It could be anywhere," Puck said.
Sabrina began to panic. Puck was right. She hadn't read the Jungle Book from cover to cover, but she remembered lots of settings. The Council Rock, the human village, the giant snake's lair. The door to the next story could be anywhere. Maybe they should have stayed in the sky. Maybe they would have been able to see it from up there. She wondered how things could possibly get any worse when she got her answer. From out of the trees stampeded a herd of long-horned cattle. They tore through the jungle, their hooves grinding everything into pulp and their horns goring trees and bushes. Their panicked bellows rose above the noise of the roaring and crackling fire. The children leaped behind some ancient trees for protection, but unfortunately, another wave of cattle was approaching from that direction as well. Nowhere was safe.
"Don't worry, honey," Puck said to Sabrina.
He spun around on his heels, and she watched him hulk up in a disturbing transformation. One of Puck's many abilities as a fairy was to change into a variety of different animals, which didn't make it any less weird each time he did it. His arms grew in length, and his shoulders hunched with dense muscles. As his whole body sprouted thick black fur, Sabrina could tell he was transforming into a gorilla. He snatched the girls in his huge arms, climbed a tree, and plopped them all onto a high branch. A moment later, he morphed back to his true form.
"We'll be safe here," Puck said, as they eyed the sea of cattle below.
"Are you sure?" Daphne said. "Look!"
From within the stampede, Sabrina spotted a herd of creatures altogether unlike the cows. These were small, pink, and fast, with little legs and arms to scurry along the ground.
"Revisers!" Sabrina cried.
Everything that got in the way of the revisers was quickly devoured and vanished. In fact, the very jungle was disappearing. Every inch was being replaced with an empty white void.
"I vote that we get out of here," Daphne shouted.
"I second that," Sabrina said.
Puck's wings unfolded, and he grabbed the girls. Soon the trio was zipping along the tree line, high above the hungry monsters, but Sabrina felt far from safe. The entire world was vanishing, not just the trees and animals. Even the night sky was being devoured. Each of the little pink creatures was an eating machine, chomping on the cattle, the trees, the ground, everything. The editor's words echoed in her mind.
"Leave now, or my revisers will devour you."
Daphne's eyes were wide with fear.
"They're very fast."
"Don't worry, I'm faster," Puck shouted. "Besides, would I let something happen to my fiancé and my future sister-in-law? While we're on the subject, I was hoping we could discuss our wedding cake. I'd like to go traditional, you know, something stuffed with wild boar and drizzled with spider icing. What do you think, honey? Oh, and when do you want to go and look at engagement rings?"
Sabrina wondered if it would be better to shake herself loose and die on the jungle floor rather than take more of the stinky boy's teasing.
"You keep flapping your mouth, fairy, and I'm going to engage my fist to your lip."
Just then, Puck's body jerked to a sudden stop. All three of the children fell like stones. They landed hard on the ground and lay there for a moment, groaning in pain. Sharp agony raced along Sabrina's hip, and another pain ached in her right shoulder.
"I didn't see that branch," Puck said.
"Branch? It felt like a truck to me," Daphne said as she crawled to her feet.
Sabrina sat up, nursing her wounds. She was sure her whole left side would be black and blue in the morning.
"We have to keep moving."
The three helped one another up and began to stagger forward. There was no path to follow, and the exposed roots and heavy brush did not make walking easy. Before long, Sabrina could hear the hungry, chattering teeth of the editor's pets behind her. She turned and spotted one darting in the undergrowth several yards behind them. How could she have chased after Mirror into this crazy book? She had signed their death warrant because she had made another dumb mistake.
"There's the door," Daphne shouted.
Sabrina peered into the brush. Something white was standing in the bushes up ahead. Something that didn't belong there. Daphne was right. There was a door. But could they reach it before the revisers devoured them? She dug deep into herself and found the energy to run harder and faster. Her determination to save her family and herself made the pain in her hips and legs vanish. Before she knew it, she was turning the knob and opening the door. Daphne and Puck tumbled through, and Sabrina started to follow. Before she could, a revisor clamped down on her loincloth. It growled and tore at the cloth. Sabrina could feel its incredible strength as it pulled her back with its teeth, and she fell to the ground. It dragged her away along the ground toward the hungry jaws of the rest of its pack. She kicked at the creature, pounding it with her feet, but nothing could stop it. She was sure she was about to die when the creature let go of her loincloth and was lifted off the ground. It squirmed and cried as if in the hold of a vice-like grip, but there was no one there holding it up. Sabrina didn't stop to figure it out. She scurried backward into the open doorway. Just before the jungle vanished from view, she saw the revisor slam into the ground. It looked as if it were dead. She remembered the Munchkin's warnings about staying inside the margins. Was this invisible power what he was trying to tell her about?